Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Easy Conversations podcast, a podcast about having easy conversations, where every week we dive into the topics of mental health, adversity, spirituality, and societal issues. I'm your host, Furkan Dandia. And join me in this week's episode where I sit down with the esteemed Dr. Stephen Poulter to delve into the intricate layers of modern masculinity. This is Dr. Poulter's second appearance on the podcast, and I was super excited to welcome him back to talk about his new book, Modern Masculinity, that's coming out. And he brings his wealth of expertise to the table, offering profound insights into the evolving landscape of what it means to be a man in today's society. Together, we navigate the complexities of societal expectations and the relentless pressure to fit into narrow definitions of masculinity. Dr. Poulter sheds light on the detrimental effects of trying to confine masculinity to rigid stereotypes, emphasizing the importance of embracing diversity and individuality. Throughout our conversation, we confront the pervasive misconception that masculinity is equated with physical strength and stoicism. Dr. Poulter is a renowned Los Angeles-based clinical psychologist in private practice with over 30 years of experience. He brings a fresh and original perspective as a former law enforcement officer, seminary graduate, psychologist, father, and author to some of the timeless questions of families, parents, fathers, mothers, marriage, divorce, and emotional shame. In his latest book, Modern Masculinity, Dr. Poulter offers men a complete toolkit for discovering their attachment style, coming out of the internal man cave that stops them from effectively communicating with a partner, setting healthy boundaries, and respecting others' boundaries. You can find Dr. Poulter online and on social media. His Instagram handle is at dr.steven_poulter_. And also, please leave a review or a comment at the end of the episode. I would truly appreciate it. And a brief word for our sponsors. One thing that's really helped my mental health is a daily routine. Every morning, after doing some breathing exercises and cold exposure, I like a smooth cup of coffee. I've been drinking Four Sigmatics coffee for the last 3 years, and it's been very beneficial for my routine. I especially like their Lion's Mane and Chaga Mushrooms coffee, which helps me with my mental focus and energy every morning. Four Sigmatics is on a mission to infuse functional mushrooms into the foods and supplements people love and use daily. Their goal is to enrich minds and improve well-being. By pairing Lion's Mane with coffee for focus or reishi with cacao for a sense of calm, their brews, blends, and powders get everyone in a good headspace so they can focus on what matters most. Check out Four Sigmatics and use the code EASYCONVERSATIONS, all one word, at checkout for 10% off your order. Today's episode is also sponsored by BetterHelp. Therapy can be very difficult for many people to start. In my personal experience, when I was going through my divorce, therapy allowed me to bridge a significant gap. With the help and support of my therapist, I was able to uncover a lot of repeated patterns and behaviors that were impacting my life. Through goal setting, I was able to focus on things that required attention, which allowed me to improve the relationship that I had with myself and, by extension, the relationship that I had with others. As a therapist, I've been able to see the positive benefits that clients are able to derive through healthy rapport and goal setting. BetterHelp allows a lot of flexibility where clients can schedule video sessions, sessions on the phone, or through messaging. In most cases, BetterHelp will match you up with a licensed therapist within 48 hours. If that's not a good fit for you, BetterHelp will work with you to find the right fit. Join over 4 million users today by following the link in the description or going to BetterHelp, that's H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/easy10 to get 10% off your first month of therapy. Dr. Stephen Poulter, thank you again for coming on today and wanting to have this conversation with me. It was almost over a year ago that I was able to meet you in person and go for dinner with you in LA. great conversations, and I'm always honored to be able to virtually right now, but be able to sit with you and have a discussion around some of these topics that we're going to get into. I know you also are releasing a book around modern masculinity, but yeah, just share a little bit about yourself with listeners who haven't heard the first episode we did together.
Yeah. Listen, first of all, it's great to see you again. And I enjoy meeting with you and just be part of the brotherhood. Yeah. And it's probably where I want to jump in. And when you and I met, we talked about, just even right now, about masculinity, being a man, and that we all want to be good men, partners, fathers, sons, employers, employees. We want to do the right thing. I find a lot of men come to me like, what does that look like? How do I do that? Or how do I kind of do it the full circle? And that's what you and I meeting together and talking, empowering men to be their best self. And as men become more empowered, their women benefit too. Because women know that a healthy guy is a good guy. They want their guys to be healthy. Mom's son, I mean, mom's daughters, partners.
Yeah.
Get into a lot with guys. There's no look for what masculine is.
Mm-hmm.
Body type, no physique or wealth. And that's all exterior. What you talk about today and the work you've done, it's all about what's going on inside of you. Process. It's not an ending point.
Yes.
There are road markers of what a healthy man is, but I, all the time, guys, I'm not muscular. It has nothing to do with masculinity. Zero. On a scale, and it's minus numbers. And I tell guys that. It's about, it has to do with your emotions, your physical health, your emotional health, relationships, your personal, your life, passion. That is inside of you. Those things you can't buy.
Right. No, and I appreciate that. Thank you. And for me, I think the way, and one of the things I struggle with, and that a lot on social media, is that trying to define what masculinity is, right? It's almost like you're this exclusive group now. And if you don't look a certain way, like you said, if you're not lifting heavy weights, and if you don't have that, or if you don't have that high net worth, then you don't fit part of the club. So meanwhile, while these men are trying to preach masculinity, they're also secluding other men that perhaps don't check off some of those boxes. And that's where I get frustrated, because it's, okay, you mean, I appreciate what you're doing, you know, what you're trying to preach. But by doing that, you're almost pushing out a whole bunch of men who perhaps don't have that physique, and they feel, am I less of a man because I don't look a certain way, or because I'm not lifting heavy weights at the gym? And that's where how can we practice compassion, right? And one of the things before we jumped on the call, I think it's a way of thinking, right?
Yes.
Am I passionate towards some other men that I don't feel perhaps are doing what they need to do? But that's okay. Everyone's on their own individual. Me, what it's come down to personally, the way I try to define myself, and I'm not saying that's my definition of masculinity, but what I hold myself accountable to is, am I making my physical health a priority? Am I making my mental health a priority? And am I making my spiritual health a priority? Those three are paramount for me on every single day. And if either one of those is being compromised for whatever reason, I don't feel good. I don't feel like healthy. So I think those are three things that I try to at least encourage people to focus on. And everyone has their own journey, even with those three.
I couldn't agree with you more. It's interesting. The old style masculinity, to your point, the boys club, it's all about appearance.
Yeah.
You know, here might be the right country club, the right car, the right zip code. Those are pieces of a puzzle, but they're not the puzzle. And what you just described about your emotional health, physical health, and spiritual health, the only other thing I might add in is relational health. It's all the same. But those four pieces are our foundation. And our spiritual health is our life goals, our plan, our purpose. And without, that's where people become dangerous. Men become dangerous. Because then you're looking for something that's outside of you.
Right.
That's where, I don't want to get too heavy, but what you just said about the spiritual health, your physical health, absolutely. Okay. But a lot of guys don't listen to their bodies until their shoulders falling off or they can't have sex. Then they start listening. You know, listen before that. But, and your emotional health is, like you just said, that's paramount to how your quality of life is.
Yes, absolutely. And that's the one thing, right? Again, not to pick on anyone, but when a lot of these guys online or social media are preaching, again, looking like a certain way, the physique, they're potentially not paying that much attention on the emotional health, and that could be deteriorating or falling apart. I believe all of us have some sort of trauma that we're carrying around, and you see it a lot, especially now, because we all have access to technology and we're all connected digitally, people projecting their trauma outward. And there's, again, this stigma around, well, obviously we're talking more about mental health now, but a lot of people stigmatize it still today that if you go for therapy, if you seek help, you're a weak man. And I tend to go back to, yes, maybe therapy is more secular now in a way, and it's obviously talked about more easily accessible. But even when I read history, men used to spend time in tribes and they were talking about difficult things. They were
absolutely
helping each other out. So that was a form of therapy. And obviously now with the way we live in suburbs, have these lives where we're almost like sedentary and we're not getting out or we're not traveling in tribes, it's important to then seek out therapy and be more mindful of it and deliberate.
Yes.
Right.
But yeah. It's interesting. In the gatekeeper is where the idea for confession from the Catholic Church started. Tribes, there's always the tribesman. He was the head therapist.
Yeah.
The rabbi, the minister, the monk. Therapy has been around as long as sex has. Let's just get that on the table. Talking, we always know men talking to men has always led to good things happening. And that's one of the things I talk about in my book, Modern Masculinity, is therapy has always been around. And having, like you said, or having a couple good male friends, that is therapeutic.
Yes.
There's so many different programs or ways to be therapeutic.
Yeah.
Your meditation, self-reading, having a close friend, and having a mentor is therapeutic. I tell guys, let's get out of the dark ages and open up the playbook. Let's get out of the dark. Like, women are really good at, they got their book clubs, the wine clubs, the mommy and me. All that's therapeutic.
Yeah.
You don't feel isolated.
Yeah.
Can we go to that for a second about isolation?
Yeah, please. Please.
Because I think that's number one of what really just runs guys off the road is they get isolated. And when you get isolated, you get good things don't happen. But you get upset, you get distorted. And what happened in, we'll talk about the shooting in Kansas City a few days ago.
Yeah.
But when men are connected, they're going to live longer. And if they are starting to isolate, the brotherhood can help bring them back, bring some balance. And the greatest indicator for suicide isn't depression, it's isolation.
Yeah.
And when you're saying about living in the suburbs, you might live in the hub of New York City and still be isolated.
Yeah.
It's that emotional quality. And that's not what you and I look like. It's our ability to relate and to be empathetic, which is being vulnerable. And being vulnerable is being honest. And when you're honest, you're being responsible. And these are keys that really women respect.
Yes.
Guy, I don't want my partner to think I'm weak. No. If you're being vulnerable, you're honest. And if you're honest, you're responsible. How is that not a win? The win.
And I think part of the problem is, and I was mentioning this to a client, is when you even look up the definition of vulnerability, it presents it as someone who's perhaps prone to or susceptible to getting hurt, right? So it does present that weakness aspect, and that's where a lot of people get stuck. So
yeah,
I think it, not only do we need to debunk that and almost find some of these terms, it's making them okay. And obviously a lot of men are being more vulnerable and preaching it and talking about it. But at the end of the day, I think we need to have more of these conversations. And I do appreciate you raising the whole aspect of isolation, because that is a huge problem. And some of the reasons we talked about earlier, even the men that are preaching masculinity indirectly are also secluding and isolating other men that may not fit in. And this is part of the epidemic with men right now, is they feel isolated, right? They can't seem to find a sense of connection. And to your point, connection is huge. And that's where that relationship aspect comes in.
Yeah.
And I also think spiritually too, right? Being able to connect to something bigger than yourself offers
absolutely
a lot of resilience, right? For me, I know throughout the last few years, just dealing with adversity and difficult situations, going back to that spirituality has really helped me, because I know I'm connected to something. And through that connection to God, for me, I feel connected to other individuals.
Right on. I can't say enough. I talk about the five F's: family, finances, friends, forgiveness. We got to talk about that in a second. And then your life plan, which is believing in yourself and something bigger than you, which is your spiritual peace.
Yeah.
When men are honest, that's strength. That's vulnerability. And when I hear what you just said, Fran, about guys on the internet talking about it being weak or being a man child, that's not being a man child. Being honest is a magnet for personal growth, change, authenticity, empowerment. Honesty is one of the doorways to our personal transformation.
Yeah.
Because part of the spiritual path is we're honest with ourselves.
Yes.
About what's going on. Not going on, for that matter.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was talking to a friend about that too. And a lot of the time, because I'll hear guys saying, my wife's not going to find out, or this or that. It's okay. You're still living with yourself, right? So
you find
just
out.
Because, your friends or your family or your partner will not know the truth, and you can disguise it. But at the end of the day, you're the one, you're with yourself 24/7, right?
Correct.
And can take a toll on an individual if you're deceiving yourself. And that's part of, again, the issue there. Self-deception can haunt us and hurt us. The other thing, again, coming back to the spiritual connection, once you're able to, and I think it ties a little bit to the forgiveness piece that you touched on, and probably a good segue into forgiveness. When you're able to hold space for yourself and forgive yourself and have compassion that you're figuring all of this out on, you can then have that same level of compassion and empathy for everyone else, recognizing that we're all on our individual journeys here. No one's ahead of, no person's ahead of the other. We're all figuring it out slowly. And then you can hold that space for each other. And then if you're getting frustrated that maybe my friend here isn't doing what he needs to do, then be a role model for him, right? Bring him along.
That's a really good point. I like that. Bring them along. So we all have dogs, or dogs are pack animals. I always tell guys, we're not any different, dude. We do better in a group. Having a couple guys, we live longer, we do better. And that breeds honesty. Because you've got some guys, like I've got a dear friend, like my spiritual partner, and Carter, we talk about what's going on, what's really about forgiveness, let go of resentments, our families, our kids, all that stuff. Having a person to talk to about your spiritual life to me, is a therapist.
Yeah.
Maybe not professionally, but it, again, it's you and I, right, being transparent.
Yes.
And transparency is strength.
Yeah, absolutely.
It takes courage to be transparent.
Yeah, and you talked about the confessional part too. And obviously, a lot of times we feel, I think also, and I think this has existed from the beginning of time, but we do get arrogant and we feel like we're above the law, so to speak, and it, intellectually we're advanced. But you have to, you can't just throw the baby out with the bathwater. You have to almost consider that a lot of these practices and things that mm-hmm. people were doing in ancient times or even in religious practices, they served a purpose. They were there
absolutely.
For a reason. Yep. And we can't just question it and then throw it out. But I often think about that confessional piece, and it's so crucial. There's a reason that it was there. And I think now, as we've evolved as a species, mm-hmm. so have our problems, the things we deal mm-hmm. with. Think about yeah. it now. We're connected. I touched on that digitally. Yep. We're connected to the world and everything. So a lot of the things that are happening in the world are just in our face. So absolutely, then we also need to evolve as how we're offering therapy. So that's why I think, you know, a lot of the things we learn when we become therapists, it's to be able to help people in terms of listening to them, understanding them, giving them tools on how they can navigate some of their mental health. So everything has to evolve, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting. I have guys that come in and see me. In the majority of my practice are men anywhere from ages 10 to 90 years old, literally 90 years old. And one of the guys in their 20s and 30s, they go, how do I really make this work? I always, two things. Take full responsibility for your life. Ask, what's my responsibility in this? Do I have responsibility? Because responsibility keeps you in the present. And that's the quickest way to resolve trauma. Now, that may seem counterintuitive, but because responsibility breeds honesty. And most guys with trauma aren't honest about with themselves, because it's too hard to admit that happened or the impact it's had. But responsibility is, I got to look at that. There's no way that wasn't. I come in, his dad got shot in the front lawn by the neighbor who was an aggressive guy. And 16 years later, he gets engaged, and his wife-to-be says, I can't marry you until you go to therapy. He looks at me like, is that a problem? You know, what she said is not a problem. It's a problem that you don't think that's a problem. That's our problem. And he realized he'd never dealt with it. He realized he wasn't being responsible for his own life. He was acting out. I know it's a very extreme case, but it's not that, it's not that extreme. Because we carry that kind of stuff in us.
Yeah.
And he was getting arguments with his supervisors or sales reps. I'm like, Hank, I'm not bringing anybody. You got to take responsibility for that. There's a reason why you're raging.
Yeah.
Can we talk about that for a second? I see guys on the internet talk a lot about rage, and they label immediately as toxic. What do you see that?
I think when you were mentioning this individual, and yeah. I think what the word that came up for me was empathy. And it's difficult, right? I can appreciate why a lot of men or people in general won't get to the deeper issues, because it's uncomfortable. It's difficult, right? A lot of feelings and emotions come up. And if you haven't had that experience, or no one was around you at that time to help you or guide you through it, then it's stepping into a landmine, right? You don't know what's going to happen. So for me, when I stuff like that, I feel empathy, because that's what the other individual needs. And we can sit there and judge them and question choices. And yeah, we could say they're being toxic, but deep down somewhere, they're hurt.
Absolutely.
And how can you get to that pain? How can you make them feel that? And we all, as individuals, we talk about vulnerability. What's the whole point of vulnerability? It's to be seen. It's to be heard. It's to be understood. So a lot of these guys walking around with pain And again, projecting that outwards as anger, they just want to be seen and heard and understood because that's never happened for them.
You describe my book better than I can describe it. It's the truth. Those are three. Always, guys want three things from their dad: to be seen, understood, and loved.
Yeah.
Because if you're seen, you feel approved of.
Yeah.
Understood is, I'm understanding you. You're not an extension of me. And feeling loved is that it's the action of feeling accepted.
Yeah.
Because guys go, I know my dad loved me. But for guys, I would say it's the action of feeling accepted, that you're good enough. Three components, that rage, it dissipates like the morning fog. Dissipates.
But what are your thoughts, like, when men then want to outsource that, right? Like, I struggle with that a little bit. Because what I try to preach people is, it's your responsibility, coming back to what you said. Because when you're able to take that responsibility, not only do you experience freedom, but you also feel like you have more influence and agency over your life. Yes, maybe as a child, we didn't get that sense of validation or approval. But as you become an adult man and you're starting to have your own children, you can't continue to outsource that need to your partner or your friends or your employer. You need to take that responsibility. And for me, again, what really helped going inward and understanding that, I am a creation, a piece of creation.
Yes.
I'm good enough. The fact that I'm here against all the odds and all the probabilities that I made it here, and I'm part of this beautiful world where everything's just functioning in nature so beautifully, that to me is a miracle, and I'm worthy enough, right? But how do we get people to that place? And again, everyone's journey is different, right?
Absolutely. Trent, well, you very articulate. I love you. You really are just describing the process. Dr. Mills, he wrote the book on men's health, and he's my doctor, and he starts his book off. There's two reasons why men come to see a doctor. They have no time, too busy. A, their shoulders falling off, or B, they can't have sex. Mm-hmm. He said, at that point, there's an opening for healing, not only physically, but emotionally. Mm-hmm. And when I find many times, what you're just saying, I made a note here about when helping men understand that you're not, your life's not outside of you. You can't outsource your healing. You can't outsource how you feel about yourself. And that's where you do that long enough, something breaks down physically. And that's what a lot of the medical doctors I know, they talk about how once someone breaks down physically, they want to get them into therapy.
Yeah.
And they want to get them, because they realize, okay, we can deal with your shoulder, but that's a symptom. Or your heart attack is a symptom of what's underneath the hood. And I find guys intuitively know you can't outsource it. But you said a few minutes ago, making room to sit with it.
Yeah.
Guys, last week, simple. Give it to me, Doc, in a few words. Take responsibility for life and learn to sit with your discomfort. If you do those two things this month, you're well on your way to where you want to. Sitting with the discomfort. Because there's pain and avoidance in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Like, I get uncomfortable having to promote my book. It sounds odd. I want to do this perfectly. And I meet guys like yourself that are gracious, but having to sit with the discomfort, that opens a lot of doors. I don't want to simplify that, but when you just seen, like, on your spiritual work, you learn to sit with it so you don't have to outsource it.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to get rid of it. Part of addiction. I can't sit with myself. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
I just can't. Right.
Yeah, no, I can relate to that. For years, I was running from the pain or the discomfort. And most of it was on a subconscious level. I didn't even know I was doing it at times. And I think a lot of people fell for that. But it was how can I find that, what I was looking for? How can I find that approval and that validation and that and that love from another person in a relationship or in social gathering or in some intoxicating behaviors? How can I find that, what I was searching for? But it was always within me. It was always there. And when I sat with it, that's where I found it. I was like, oh, all that peace and that love, everything I'm looking for is right here in my heart. And how can I just, for over years through pain and heartbreak and hurt, we tend to put a veil over our heart. And that's, I think personally, and I've talked to many people about this, including on this podcast, part of our journey is how do we unveil that heart? How do we find that within ourselves?
I can't say that enough. Everyone's on a spiritual journey.
Yeah.
People say, I don't believe that. Okay. You're on a life journey, which is your spiritual journey. Okay. Let's not get lost in semantics.
Yeah.
I find what you just said, that's, if you don't do it in this life, you're going to come back and do it in the next life. We're going to keep taking this class until we get it. And I tell guys, you want to master this, okay? You're going to keep taking this class. Have you taken this class? Yes, I've taken it many times. A lot of them pass, fail, and you know, I've had to come back and get a passing grade. We're all taking it. But that veil, I've got a guy right now that's drinking himself into oblivion. Mm-hmm. And I said to him that whatever it is that's killing you, you're bigger than that. Mm. You're bigger than what you think is going to kill you.
Yeah.
He goes, well, I don't. He goes, I'm not that spiritual. I go, yes, you are. It's in you. And that's what men want to hear, that it, you can sit with it. Your life journey is bigger than your trauma.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's bigger than your loss or your divorce or finances. Your life is bigger. Your life journey is bigger than that.
Yeah.
And that way you don't have to send it away. You don't have to outsource it.
Yeah.
And that's shame, in a nutshell.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I think for me, that's really come into perspective being a father, right? When I see my son struggle or when I see my son going through his own journey, and as much as parents, we want to protect our children and control the environment for them and make sure they don't get hurt or make decisions for them. I've had to sit back and just take that perspective in that this is his journey. And as much as it sucks for me and experience that pain, I can't control it. And all I can wish for and pray for is that, you know, he gets his passing grade, but I can't control that. I can't control it at all. But that's given me perspective and an understanding that at the end of the day, we're all here on our individual journeys, right? And we have friends and family members that we all wish the same for. But again, we can't control it. All you can wish for or pray for is that they get there too. And because again, the healing power of it is so profound. That's all you want for other people too, right? And be able to share that. And to your point earlier, we do find that in our friends or even our partners, where we can have those conversations around that spiritual being or that journey we're all on. And some of the challenges we go through, there's always doubt, hard times when things get tough, but being able to navigate that is that beauty of being in this world and experiencing it all of it, right?
Absolutely. And to your point, I tell guys, dads, your children are leased vehicles. They're leased to you. You don't own it. You don't own. We don't own our kids. They are loaned to us on a temporary basis.
And
that helps us. I think it helps guys to realize, wait, I need to empower him, my daughter or my son, regardless of their age.
Yeah.
To get on their path and keep going forward.
For sure.
And that sitting with the discomfort. We see our teenager or college age or post-college son or daughter moving forward, just taking a deep breath. They're going to get there. They're going to get there. And our job is to be the prodigal parent.
Yes.
Wait on the front porch and just let them know that we do. We're here.
Yeah.
We're here. Yeah. I tell parents, don't worry about don't worry about the prodigal son or daughter. Be the prodigal parent. Just wait, because good things are coming.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's recognizing that you can realize that through your own life, how resilient we are, and having that same sense of appreciation and acceptance that our children are also resilient in the same fashion, and mm-hmm. having that just patience and just being a guiding light for them when they need you.
Yep.
That relationship doesn't end, right? So in my men's group, we do talk about
absolutely.
That quite a bit, that it's, you know, a lot of the times we tend to think in society that we have mm-hmm. to be a parent until our children are the age of 18, and then they move out and they have their own life. But no, you're a parent for the rest of your life, right? Even if they grow up, they still need you, right? And they'll want you.
When I hear that statement, I just start laughing. I go, I don't know what you're reading, but that's not the way it goes. Yeah. No, this is a till death do us part. And this is the whole, parent for life. You're a high school student for 4 years, but you're a parent for life. Yeah. And this myth about 18, I tell guys, what's that about? Say that. 18 something. No, that's another chapter.
Yeah.
That's not the end of the book. That's just another chapter.
Yeah.
It's their discomfort. Oh, yeah. I'm off the job at 18. No, you're not. It just got more interesting.
Yes.
And that's all I'm going to tell you.
Definitely a different chapter and a different trajectory for sure. The other thing you touched on earlier in the physical side of things, you're saying, your doctor was saying, a lot of men will come for help when their shoulders mm-hmm. falling apart, or they can't have sex. But you almost see that also on the relational or emotional side of things where, for example, the marriage is falling apart. The partner's asking for a divorce and they're like, okay, now I'll go for help. So in all of that, it's like, how can we be proactive? Continue to take our physical and mental health seriously and prioritizing it before these things happen. And then we try to, patch things up or put a band-aid fix or then try to be reactive. How can we be more proactive?
I'm laughing. Okay. Again, you wrote the book. I clearly took notes from you. As Jonathan Gutman interviewed 4,400 women. You've heard him. He's the relationship expert.
Yeah, Gottman, like the husband and the wife, yeah.
Yeah, and he's 85 years old. And to your point, 30-second backstory. When he was 30 or 31, he got professorship at Yale Medical School. He comes home, his wife divorced him that day.
Yeah.
He never saw it coming. He went from pediatric medicine to psychiatry because he realized he knew nothing about relationships. Mm-hmm. He completely missed that mark. Mm-hmm. And part of his work is that 70% of all divorces are because of a lack of vulnerability, emotional connection between the couple. The 30% is just weirdness, okay? That stuff we would expect. But that 70% is what you just said. And in the book, in the relationship chapter, I start off with the guy that refuses to go to therapy. He's a hedge fund guy, comes home one day and the house is empty. Mm-hmm. Wife and three kids left. He is in my office 7 a.m. the next morning. And for the next 14 days. And I tell him, I think the ship sailed. Mm-hmm. When women are done begging, asking, pleading, and they say they're done, I tell guys, it is done.
Yeah.
But to your point, how do you avoid that? You've got that's being realizing your issues with your wife or your partner usually predate them by 30 years. They're your issues. And I tell guys, if your partner is asking you to go to therapy, go.
Yeah.
Go. This isn't about agreement. This is not Switzerland. You need to go because they're telling you something. And if you don't listen, they're going to have to do something to get your attention. And what I have found in my practice, 80% of the time when the woman leaves, it's over.
Yeah.
There's usually a 3 to 5 year buildup to that point. And when she pulls the plug, it's over. Done. The patient's dead. So guys say to me, how do I avoid this? Learn from it.
Yeah.
It's painful.
Absolutely. You
know, and the guys, she never came back. And now they co-parent together. And I do believe ultimately they're going to reunite. But he's been in therapy with me now for 3 years. Realized he has childhood issues with his mom. And his self-worth was his financial worth, which is erroneous. So misleading. And he's a better husband and father as a divorced man.
Yeah, absolutely.
It broke him down. And because of that, his partners, she never thought he'd come around. But I said, don't go to therapy. Don't do this to win her back. Go this because you want to be a better person.
Right.
And you want to heal that. And when he made that shift, it's amazing how things really worked well. It's not a Hollywood story. It's a story.
Yeah.
But I really hear what you say. 80% of the couples I see, they're like the clock's ticking.
Yeah.
For her. Or gay or straight, doesn't matter. One of them saying, come on. We got to do this. And the other front, oh, come on. They dismiss it. And when we dismiss our partners, it's to our own detriment, to our own demise.
For sure.
And that's where I think the old school masculinity, it doesn't work. Making money and showing up is great, but that's not 25% at the most.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
You have to be present emotionally too. And whether it's your partner or your children, they need that emotional connection. You can buy them gifts, you can splurge on them, but that only gets you so far. And at some point it gets old and tiring.
It does.
Yeah. And it comes back to what we talked about earlier. Everyone wants to be seen, heard, and understood. And, you know, if you're out there trying to make money, but you're not giving those three things to your partner, then.
I'm sorry. You know, what you just said, I hope I didn't give too long of an answer, but in my practice, I see that 3 or 4 times a year. And it's each time it's equally as painful. Because I'm trying to explain to the guy, his emotional IQ is so it's disproportional to what he does. Like, his financial IQ is wonderful, but his emotional relationship IQ is very low. And because he does so well financially, the company puts up with him.
Yeah.
His wife's not going to.
Yeah.
And his kids don't talk to him. And I always tell people, remember John D. Rock, when he died, John Rockefeller, his children did not come to his funeral.
Mm.
And before he died, he realized that he was not successful. His children did not like him. I don't know why that doesn't get more press. That stuck me between the eyes. I go, guys, if your kids don't like you, there's one thing they don't want to talk to you or going through a stage. But when your kids genuinely dislike you, you've got to listen to why.
Because
they're telling you something.
Yeah.
And I'm not seeing your kids. You're a parent. You understand what I'm saying. When they genuinely, like, Dad, what are you doing? This is, like, what's going on? This isn't right. Or how you treat other people or how you treat their mother. You know, it's very important.
Yeah. I think it comes back to vulnerability. And I think I'm working with men. And talking about even anger and rage, one of the things is we're trying to hide from or run from the fear, the pain. And it's that pain, right? And vulnerability. We don't want to, because there's so much trauma and hurt that men are carrying around in themselves, they're afraid to be able to experience that love with their children at times.
Right on.
They don't want to experience that vulnerability for whatever reason, right? And I come back to, again, how can you have compassion even for those guys? Because they're chasing something that's fleeting. At the end of the day, I ask a lot of guys, and not to get too dark, but I think it's an important question around our own mortality. On your deathbed, what's going to matter? The amount of money you made your employer, the amount of money you made yourself, or the relationships you had, you know, like none of that's going to be there only the people that you had meaningful relationships will be there or will be sad with you leaving this world, right? So trying to take stock of what really matters and what's meaningful, right, at the end of the day.
For that's where I want to shave my head when I hear guys talking about going to the gym and get jacked up. Okay. I'm not really sure how that is a substitution for relationships. It's not a substitution. And we measure ourselves by our relationships. Relationships matter. You tell me one part of business that isn't relationship driven. And I'm talking, it can be from the government all the way down to the person you're getting coffee from. It's all about, hello, how are you? How you doing? Yeah. Yeah, nice to meet you. That goes a long ways.
Yeah.
It is relationship. It's a myth to think it isn't.
Yeah. And if you're going to be manipulative and try to take advantage of, they'll catch on, right? So.
Yeah. Gigs up. It's a matter of time.
Yeah. If you're going to create transactional relationships, that's not going to work either in the long run.
And before we go, one thing I tell men, whatever changes you want in your life, you're going to have to go through the doorway of forgiveness.
Yes.
If you want your life, we know this on a spiritual level, it's psychological. And I tell forgiveness is personal. You need to believe in the power of forgiving, because that's going to change your life.
Yes.
And I tell guys, you want to change things, you really want to see your life move forward, let's talk about forgiveness. And they look at me like I've got three heads and tattoos on my forehead. I go, you can scoff, but I'm telling you, nothing's going to move in your life until you take forgiveness seriously. Shame can't exist when you start forgiving. Responsibility is automatic. Love, like you said, being seen, approved of, cared for, understood, all elements of forgiveness.
That quite a bit when, you know, talking to men or working with clients. They're like, oh, yeah, I don't need to forgive it. I'm over it. And it's like,
I just look
you're
at
not.
When I hear the word, I'm over it, I'm like, time out. You're so not over it. Because let me tell you, anybody who's over it, they don't say that.
Yeah, exactly.
I went to hell and back. Okay, that, I don't wish that on anybody. I hear stuff like that. Yeah, that's honest. I will never say I'm over a heartbreak. I just don't want to go through that again.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
With your podcast, I love what you're doing with men. The stuff you post means a lot to me. I get a lot out of it. And it feeds, because if I'm forgiving, I'm connected to my higher self.
Yeah.
I'm connected to my best. We're connected to our best self.
Yes.
Because our ego can't forgive. Our soul can't. Our ego can't.
Yes. I agree with you. And I appreciate that, because I think forgiveness, like everything else in our life, is a process, right? It's not something.
Right. It's not one and done.
Yeah. You don't wake up one day and say, oh, I've forgiven this situation or this person. No, it takes time. And I've had to realize that through personal experience, right? And that's why I hold space for people I work with, and I explain to them that it's one and done, like you said. It's not something you can just get over. It's something that stays with you, right? Because the pain is there.
Yeah. I know we have to stop, but I want to thank you for having me on your show today.
Yeah, yeah. No, I appreciate you. I appreciate this relationship that we've forged and everything you've done for me.
You're very kind.
Pleasure. And I don't know if you have time right now, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to quickly talk about the book, what inspired you to write it, and when it's coming out.
Thank you. It comes out in a month or so, March 19th. What inspired me to write the book is everything you and I just discussed. Helping men become their best self. And the cancellation, toxicity, all that stuff were the problem and the solution.
Yeah.
I tell guys, don't get lost in that. You're the problem and the solution. Work on your part of the solution, and this thing's going to get a lot better. the Brotherhood got a lot more horsepower than they give themselves credit for.
Yeah.
And I walked through about how your body talks, your relationships, emotions, and really how to become your best self.
Mm-hmm.
And it's masculinity, but it's present day masculinity. Mm-hmm. And my neighbor said to me, does that mean I need to wear a G-string? No. Being comprehensive doesn't mean you're weak. It takes courage. Courage is within. It's not what it looks like. That's what motivated me to write the book. And I look forward to getting a copy out to you and talking over it with you when it comes out.
Yeah, no, I look forward to it. And I think to close it off, I think you touched, before we jumped on the recording, you said it's a way of being, right? And that to me is profound. It's not what you look or show outwardly, right? It's not something you can put on. It's not something that you can just look like physically. It's a way of being. It's a mind state in my perspective. And I agree with you on that.
Oh, thank you so much. That's what motivated me to give guys from my end of the corner, meet great guys like yourself we're helping the Brotherhood. We're all in this together.
Yes. Yes.
We're in this together. That's the bottom line.
Yep. I agree with you.
Thank you. All right.
Thank you for checking out this episode with Dr. Poulter. As always, please leave a review or a comment in the comments section. I always love hearing from you. And if you haven't done so, please subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. That's the best and easiest way to support the podcast. Also, check out the sponsors in the description and subscribe to the Easy Reflections newsletter, which is fairly new. And I'm sharing a lot of information on that newsletter. So please check it out. Thank you again, and until next week.